Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, and welcome back to the Keith Cheggers podcast. I am your host, Hannah Norris, and I'm here with my co-host,
Carl Donnelly,
who's also my husband.
I know, your husband.
My lover.
Oh, yucky. What is that all about?
My friend.
Even that's a bit creepy to say, to be honest. I mean, come on.
My chef.
Yeah, I mean, that I'll take because it sounds much more sort of a utility.
Yeah.
But let's stick to just husband and wife for now. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, that's Carl. And this is episode 25. I'm currently at week 30 of my pregnancy, our pregnancy.
No, your pregnancy. We said we'd never be the sort of couple to say we're pregnant.
But I got in trouble the other day when I said my baby.
Yeah,
our baby.
I know, but I think we were discussing that, just the two of us.
Yeah.
I mean, the sort of couple that when they tell somebody, they say we're pregnant to other people, would never say that.
Yeah, I'm pregnant with our baby.
No, you're not.
Yeah, I am.
Oh, you're pregnant with our baby. Yeah, that does work, yes.
Yeah.
That is correct.
I can say that. Yeah, and so it's only 10 weeks to go until...
Oh, my God.
She's going to be here.
Yeah.
Which you, just before we started recording...
I thought it was 7 weeks for some reason. I just lost 3 weeks. I mean, we have been in lockdown, so I think I've lost all track of time.
Yeah. I have started doing a little bit of moving furniture around today.
Yes.
Which I know is due to happen, or can happen.
A hamper that's got exercise stuff in. It's a really nice hamper that you... I said, that could be good for baby stuff, and you thought about it as a toy chest.
Yeah.
So that's good that we're both on the same... sort of the thought process on that.
Yeah. And I have heard, you know, that idea of doing nesting pre-baby, but I also have heard that that's a sexist idea that's kind of put out there that starts to make women bound to the home.
Right.
So that the nesting instinct is not necessarily true.
Right.
But it's a way of bringing women down.
Do you have a nesting instinct? Or do you think it's been programmed into you? What would be your instinct?
What's my instinct? I definitely want to make the house ready.
Yeah.
And it's fun to move things around and prepare for that.
Yeah.
But I'm enlisting your help.
Yeah, I mean, I would have helped anyway.
Yeah.
But now everyone's forced to nest, aren't they? Yeah. Everyone's at home.
So everybody. Because we are still in lockdown, although the government haven't done an official statement on that. No. Yet. That's our fridge in the background taking off. But yeah, we are still in lockdown. And we have a guest today that we have just talked to via Zoom. So it's our first remote podcast episode. But it was really nice to talk to somebody else.
Yeah, it was.
And the guest, she's an actor and a comedian and a writer. Her name's Katie Mulgrew.
She's very funny.
She's very funny. And she is... a new mother. She has a four-year-old and a 4-week-old and a 1-month-old. So she's kind of had a corona baby as well.
You'll hear. She had it literally just before this all happened.
Yeah.
Timing was pretty remarkable.
Yeah. So, yeah, listen in. I hope you enjoy it. We really like talking to her. So... enjoy listening.
Bye.
Hello. So we are here remotely. This is our first remote podcast, and we are looking at Katie Mulgrew and a little baby on our computer screen. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I mean, you say little. He's a unit, mate.
How many weeks old is he?
He's just over a month.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been in lockdown since he got back from hospital. We've been in lockdown.
And how
How big was he when he was born? Because all my measurements at the moment, I'm in the 99th percentile for my baby.
This is my second. I still don't really know what percentile means. That's really terrible, isn't it? I think it's because I've never asked. So when you don't ask something and then people keep mentioning it and you don't want to be like, oh, it's too far. We're too far now into it for me to ask without
looking at you. Yeah.
It does. It's one of them. It's one of them words I have almost zero confidence saying. Percentile. It's one of the ones where I keep wanting to say it's in the 90th percentage or whatever. Like,
percentage.
I just can't. Percentile sounds like it's not a word that I should be saying.
I think.
How many weeks have you got left, Hannah? Because you can just practice that for the next. Like, how long have you got?
Yeah, I'm at 30 weeks at the moment, so 10 left.
Yes.
Which Carl just thought was seven.
For some reason, I thought we had 7 weeks left. I was all like prepped and ready. I've just found out I've got 3 more weeks of prep.
Oh, they lure you into a false sense of security. I remember when I was pregnant with my first kid, and I was like, I thought it was 9 months. Well, is my math wrong, or is it actually longer? It is longer.
Yeah.
It's a bit longer. And then both my big headed lads, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I always find because we did IVF. And basically everything was so amazingly scientific and almost magic. They showed, like, on the day of when they put the embryos in, they showed us on like this screen and it all looked amazing. Everything was so technically impressive. But then when they work out your due date, they just get out some weird like cardboard wheel.
You're like, really, guys? This is happening?
Yeah.
I've watched like magical science happening before my very eyes. Yeah. And like whip out something from like key stage three.
Yeah.
Like a bar chart. Like, all right, nice one.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, they're both late. So this guy was induced. And then Jim, my first guy, who I've sent out on a bike ride with his father because he can't. He's a delightful maniac, and he would be trying to get in on this.
Yeah.
So he's out, but he was like 14 days late.
Wow.
And so I was meant to be induced, but I went into labour the morning of the induction.
So they didn't try to induce you before that, or you said you wanted to keep waiting?
No, they didn't. They left it. I think it's. I was 12 days over, and then they were like, come in tomorrow, basically. And then
12 days. Whoa.
Yeah.
I was livid, mate. I've never been so angry in my life. And it was my unborn child I was angry at. It's not even his fault. I was like, I've never been so angry at anybody.
I mean, had you kind of enjoyed the pregnancy, or how was, like, with your first baby, how was your pregnancy up to that point? Was it?
It was all right, yeah. I was just massive. I was just really big. It was all right, though. But, yeah, and it was summer, so I was wearing, you know, it was quite nice, in fact, because I was wearing a lot of caftans and Miu Miu's.
Yeah.
Like Homer Simpson in that episode, you know, when he wants to stay at home.
Yeah, in the Miu Miu. Yeah. I was immediately like, Earth Goddess, Earth Mama. But, you know, Homer does it as well.
So, and it was a bit stressful because... I was due in August, and my husband works at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival every year.
Yeah.
So I was up at the Fringe because I was due in the middle of it. And it was just, he just didn't sleep for the entire time. I was pretty much almost 9 months pregnant and tried to go and see people's shows. And about 3 days in, I think I saw like 3 shows. And then I just sat in a chair in his office for like 2 days.
Yeah.
And then, but then he was like, anyway, so it was fine. We had him at home anyway.
Yeah. So you changed your plans then to have your baby in Edinburgh, or were you going to go back to Manchester?
We were going to go back to Manchester just before but then he was mega late, so it was fine in the end.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't really planned to. Yeah, it wasn't. I was a bit stupid in that we were going to have a baby. It wasn't oh no, but see, science has never been my strong point. So a couple of pals were like, oh, you're on the pill, you need to come off it a couple of months before So I was like, all right, well, I'm going to start. We're going to try for a baby in January. So I'll come off now then. It's like November. All right.
Yeah.
And then I came off the pill on the Monday and I was pregnant by the Friday.
Yeah. Done it.
I've got a really Catholic womb. And I think finally. Yeah.
You might not be good at science as a, like, as a subject, but as a body function.
Yeah, I was like, oh, thank you. Here we are.
Well, we were originally, so Hannah's due June 19th, and I was due in Edinburgh. So it would have been, five and a half weeks before, and Hannah was going to come up, and like that was the plan. This feels like it sort of forced us to face up to the fact that that was probably not the best idea.
Maybe.
Do you still think it would have been fine?
I'll tell you, one of the things that I was been thinking about and talking to a friend about, because having baby, obviously, we don't know in 10 weeks' time what kind of lockdown or what's still going to be going on here. And in terms of socialising a baby, you know, like I've read and heard things about it can be good for them to be meet other people and be passed around and they start to get comfortable with other people or they'll be crazy attached to just... Yeah. Me and Carl and strangers will be weird. So how have you been seeing anybody? Like, did your parents get to meet him or anything?
No. Well, so my parents and Lee's parents, my husband, they met him because we got, so I went on the Friday to be induced. I was in the induction ward till the Sunday, had him on the Sunday, came out on the Monday, and then like the world had changed.
Three days, four days.
So then my mum and dad had Jim, my first lad, they were looking after him, so they brought him home, so they got to meet Bill then, and then Lee's mum and dad, they came, and then the next day we went into lockdown, so that no one else has met him, apart from over Skype or FaceTime, and it is worrying me slightly, because with Jim, like from the get-go, he was like, grandparents were always looking after him, you know, if I was gigging, I'd have like mates look after him, you know, he's got godparents that always come and look after him, like he was... I think in a good way, he was always around people and always being looked after by lots of different people. So he's always been really good and sociable.
Yeah.
So I'm concerned about the fact that this guy, like Bill, is just going to, it's just us. He's already really needed. I don't know whether you can tell.
He's fast asleep. Right now. Yeah.
So I'm a bit concerned that he's going to be super needy, but... There's nothing you can really do.
No, that's I'm of that mindset as well, particularly now because I'm due in 10 weeks, but not really knowing what state the world's going to be in then, like whether...
Even the hospitals, what they're going to be like. It's at the minute, Hannah's not... the last sort of hospital meeting was cancelled yesterday over the phone. So at the minute, it's still quite like what's going to happen on the actual day.
Yeah. But there's no way of changing it. So for me and for us, we just got to accept it. But then I wonder, you know, the kind of the general anxiety that's around whether he feels that.
I really feel for you because I said that to my friend who's a midwife, Helen. I said, I'm really glad I had him when I had him, just like because it felt like it was the tipping point because, you know, you have anxiety when you're pregnant about your baby and if it's going to be okay and is the birth going to be okay. You've got all those anxieties and to have all those other ones thrown into the mix as well as like, oh well, am I allowed a birth partner, will I be, you know, when we're in the hospital, how many, you know, it's up, there's so many like ifs that I just I feel for you, Hannah, mate.
Have you seen those little pictures of the babies being born in Thailand? They've got those full face masks on. They look so cute, but it's so bad.
Welding masks.
Yeah.
Oh, it's cute but bleak.
Yeah, it is a bit bleak. And they've all got facial expressions that sort of suggest they're like, come on, mate, is this necessary?
I didn't know that the world was going to be like this.
Imagine that, coming out of the womb. The world must be harsh enough. And somebody puts a welding mask on you.
That's so funny. I'm waiting for a smile. Apparently, like a month in, it's supposed to be smiling time, but he just looks so grumpy and fed up all the time. And I'm like, is he getting that off us? Like, are we giving him the world's fucked vibes? So he's just like, just grumpy, just can't be asked. I get it, mate. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Well, that's just generally in the atmosphere as well.
Yeah,
you know? Like it's, you could never have I mean, neither of us would ever have predicted that this would be where we're at when we're having new babies. And so with, like, so even up until the point where you were in hospital giving birth, that was really when things started to change into coronavirus being a
real deal. I was quite shielded from it because I was on my phone a little bit, but not really, but I didn't know that. So my husband was sat in a chair on his phone doing work, like emails, and he didn't tell me, but he was pretty much just, like, everything was getting cancelled.
Yeah.
Like, with this is cancelled, this theatre tour is cancelled, these gigs are cancelled, this is cancelled, this is, but he didn't want to tell me because he was just, so he just was like, oh yeah, just doing some emails, and in his head, oh my God, my business is crumbling. But couldn't say anything because I was not in labour, but you know, trying to, getting a lot of sweeps. I mean, I've never had so many people look, I mean, women particularly, look at my vagina or you know, yeah, touch my vagina in a very small period of time.
And that, and that
getting going, trying
the
to get
membrane sweeps, yeah.
But yeah, and then if you're in the induction ward, I didn't realise this, I didn't really know anything about induction, but you kind of get bumped up the list if you go into labour. But then if you don't, you just have to wait. So that's why I went in on Friday morning, and they didn't break my waters till the Sunday morning.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that. Like, it can be days.
Because that's, when I'd had my hospital phone appointment the other day, the doctor, it's the first time I'd actually spoken to a doctor at the hospital. We realised we were supposed to be having appointments with doctors after every scan that we had, and we'd had a few scans. But we didn't know that, so we hadn't seen any doctors. So then I had this phone call, and she said she'd like to invite me in for an induction in week 39.
Yeah.
Because I'm 40 and because we did IVF, and I'm a little bit like, I don't think I really want to do that, and I'm going to see how I am able to communicate that and how I'm able to stick to that, or if I'm not. So I'd like to know a bit more about it from your experience.
We went in on a Friday morning, and then so they did the pessary. So they put a pessary, and that's to try and, I don't know the technical. Started going,
stimulate, yeah.
Kick it off, mate. Kick it off,
yeah.
Dr. Mulgrew, you're welcome. So it did, and then they came in after about, because if it doesn't help. So it's, if it doesn't help dilate, then you have to have another pessary. They do that sort of every, I think you have it, is it every 4 hours? Or so they came and checked, and they said that I dilated like an extra couple of centimetres. So it was like 2.5 centimetres, which is enough to break your waters. So, said, yeah. Oh, so they could break your waters now. So I thought, oh, amazing. I'm going to be in the labour ward. I'm going to go home later with a baby. Like, oh, yeah. Watch Bubble Box. Like, I'm going to be home. It's going to be great. And then nothing happened, and we were just waiting and waiting and waiting. And I rang the bell about 1 o'clock in the morning. They just said, "Hiya, what's going on?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Oh, was it not explained to you that, you know, you're on a list, so it could be days before you know they break your waters and they give you the hormone drip? Yeah, but you have to wait for a place in the labour ward. So we'll give you sweeps and we'll try and move it along. And if you go into labour, brilliant, you can go in." So then you get all this pressure because you feel like it's a club that you're not allowed into, like a nightclub. Yeah. You're like, oh, why am I not? Why won't my body just go into labour? Like, please, you're already late. Just go into labour. But it did happen. So, yeah, Sunday morning they said, okay, we've got a slot. Wheel me in. And then they break your waters, and then they put the hormone drip in. And then it was, I don't know, it's different women react to it differently, but it was just mega quick then. I had him in like 3 hours.
And was that more painful than your previous birth?
Yes, because it's so intense and it happens quickly.
Yeah.
Whereas Jim was like 17 hours, but it was very slow on the uptake. So it was a long time, and I was knackered by the end of it. And in the end, with Jim, I had forceps and I had a episiotomy.
Yeah.
And so I had a lot of help. So I didn't actually push him out. He was kind of dragged out.
Yeah.
Wouldn't.
He wasn't leaving.
They were like, get out, mate. Like, you've had enough. Come on. Yeah. like a stag do, like a stagger.
Yeah.
Get out, mate. And but with Bill, I did push him out. £9.10 of him.
Oh. Yeah, wow.
Pushed him out by myself. But then that was weird because you watch movies and in every movie I've ever watched or every television show I've ever watched where someone gives birth, there's always the bit where they say, oh, I can see the head, you can see the head. Yeah. Just like, more push. And they push and then the baby comes out. Whereas I remember they said, oh, we can see the head, we can see the head. And I was like, brilliant. Ah. So I was pushing and then 10 minutes later, they were like, we can see the head. I was like, I know you can see the fucking head. Why is it not, like, why is it not out yet? I don't understand. Like, it's there. Why,
yeah.
Why is he not here yet? I don't understand. Just
holding on the inside.
I know the head's still there. But I did have, I had loads more drugs with Bill than I did with Jim. Mm-hmm. I didn't have anything with Jim apart from gas and air, which the first time you have the gas and air, ugh, so delicious. You're just like, oh my God, this feels like Glastonbury, like 2002. This is like,
like, it's just, yeah.
You feel like you're in a field and then you remember you're having a baby. It's lovely. But it was quite intense pain, so I went for delicious Remy fentanyl. But then that wasn't working, so I got a double dose.
Mm-hmm.
So that was great. I thoroughly recommend that, Hannah.
All right.
Is that what intravenous is it?
Oh. Yeah, it's a clicker. Mm. So you click it when you feel a contraction coming, and then it helps you through it. But I don't want to sugarcoat anything. Then I was in so much pain, I just remember screaming at the midwife, just give me an epidural, I don't want to feel anything.
Yeah.
And then she went, okay. So this bloody lovely anaesthetist who was a very lovely man who I kept shouting at, and I don't really remember a lot of it. I'm sure he was used to it. He was delightful.
Yeah.
Popping in and out and then giving leaflets to Lee, not to me, because obviously I was screaming in pain, so we'd give him like a leaflet and leave the room.
Yeah.
He'd be like, oh, okay. But I didn't get an epidural in the end because they said, oh, you're like 8 centimetres dilated.
Yeah, so it's happening.
Yeah, so you can have it if you want. It'll just slow everything down.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay, fine. Crack on. That's all right then. Yeah, let's just do it. But I'm glad I did it because I did just want to, like, but yeah, if it's fast, it was weird because you feel a bit, like, shocked when the baby's there then.
Yeah.
So he was on me and Lee said the first thing I said was, God, he's massive, isn't he?
that's our nickname for our baby at the moment. It's a girl and she's called Massive Janet just because Carl said Massive Giant. I misunderstood. So she's Massive Janet.
Massive Janet. I love
it. So we definitely, do you ever run a joke long enough that, like, it feels like when she comes along, I'm actually going to probably go, I think we should call her Janet. I feel like I've taken it to that sort of logical conclusion now.
I think, mate, yeah, or at least middle name of Janet.
Yeah, there's something in there.
Yeah.
Jan, like, yeah, something beautiful. Then Janet.
who's she named after with Janet? Nobody. Yeah. We just chose it.
It was an in-joke, and when we tell you how, it'll take too long, and you probably wouldn't be honestly, in the moment,
yeah.
It was fabulous. But yeah, there was, and then I had stitches as well, because I tore, which was a bit pissed about, because I was a bit like, should have just nicked it, mate, just, because then I was like in stirrups for, like an hour. Lee whispered to me, went, I mean, it's, you know, it's lovely that they're taking the time, but this is taking a long time, mate. Three midwives. And yeah, I tell you what, the midwives, though, were just the most amazing. Like, there was, I had quite a few different ones because I had a couple in the induction unit and then I had two in the labour ward, but then, like, the head midwife as well. And then one that came, she was one who ended up screaming at. She was, bless her, she came when the other ones went on the lunch break. And at one point, I just went, oh, mate, I just feel I was like, Lee, and I think she's called Carolyn. And I was like, Carolyn, I just feel ruined. And she's like, yeah, that'll be the remifentanil. It's quite strong. I was like, no, I don't mean like I feel fucked. I meant I feel like physically ruined.
Yeah. That feeling's good. I'm into that bit.
Off my tits, although I was a little bit off my tits.
Yeah.
But yeah. But yeah, with Jim, I didn't have anything. And that was, yeah, I just had gas and air. And when I did eventually ask for like an epidural, they again said, oh, it's too late.
Too late. Mm.
Yeah. I mean, you can do, but you might as well, no pun intended, crack on.
Yeah. And with that, did they do the thing where they put the balloon in you? Is that the induction? Is that what they did for the induction for you or not?
Yeah. Well, yeah, well they do it in different ways when they break your waters.
Yeah. So
they, but and it's, you know, it's not comfortable. Like, that's the big thing with all the sweeps and the breaking the water and then checking on you know, how dilated you are. It's not nice, but you kind of have to get yourself into a mindset because, you know, the more that you tense up, the more difficult it is. So you have to I remember saying this to my friend Hayley Ellis, just had a baby, and I said, I know this sounds really stupid, but like try and think of wide open spaces or try and think about the ocean, because honestly, it's your natural inclination is to just
like, release
Venus flytrap.
Oh, yeah.
Woman's arm. Like just like, no, get out. But that's just, it's worse. You just kind of have to try and imagine you somewhere else. Like, it's just, yeah. And it's, yeah, because it's not pleasant, but it's a means to an end. And you just have to keep thinking, this brilliant thing's going to happen later. So,
yeah.
Got to just keep thinking, it'll all be worth it. You know, it's only for now. And, you know, you won't, it's a month later and, I mean, I was definitely not having any more children. Nobody else is getting pushed out of this vagina. But it does, you know, you remember it, but it does still feel like, oh, well, it was so, even with Jim, that wasn't quick. It just feels like, oh, well, it was quick and it was all in that moment and it was all worth it. Do you know what I mean? It was
kind of like long-haul flights. I always say that going to Australia, it's like 24 hours and it's pretty fucked and it's...
Yeah.
And then you're there and it's fine. Yes. That was how you had to get there.
Whilst it's happening, you're like, "What? Why? Yeah,
get me out of it. Yeah.
Why is this? Why do we have to do this? Why? why does this need to happen? Why can't I I'm like, oh, I should have just had a C-section.
Yeah.
And that's a shitty thing to say. And I hate that because that's like shaming women that have C-sections. Like it's not hard work because it is hard work.
Yeah.
And it comes with other, you know, afterwards complications, you know, any form of getting a kid out of your womb is going to, there's upsides and downsides to everything.
Yeah. And with your two pregnancies, like in terms of the actual pregnancy, were there major differences between them or just things that you learned the first time that was really useful for the second time? Or
it was weird because the second one was harder, but I think that's because I had a four-year-old to look after, four-year-old to look after. So you can't really rest. That's the tricky thing with the second one is that you with the first one, when you feel shit, you just go to sleep. You can be like, okay, I only have myself to sort of look after, so I can go and nap, or I can have like a whole day of bed if I want, if I'm feeling that way. But when you've got a four-year-old, you can't be like, right, mate, the telly's there, microwave's there, I'll see you in 5 hours.
Yeah.
Like, well, you can, your house will be burnt down in two hours.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I mean, people would judge you.
Yeah.
It's, you know, morally not great. So, it's tricky to have, gigging. I had to pull back from gigging a lot earlier. I was gigging up to about 8 months with Jim. But yeah, this time with Bill, I just did the odd one and then I stopped about Christmas time. So about 2.5 months before, because I was just knackered.
Yeah.
I couldn't look after Jim all day and then go and drive to Doncaster.
Yeah.
It was funny. I was thinking that because I work for the Melbourne Comedy Festival. So we'd gone out to Australia. We were there for 2 weeks and then we had to come back. This would be the third week of the comedy festival. So I would have been working like full on festival times. But instead, I've been lying around the house, reading books, lying in the sunshine. I do so much lying down. It's like, this wasn't the plan yet, but suddenly it's
a positive out of this situation. Yeah. It's enforced rest, isn't it? I mean, I'm sleeping. I feel like I'm banking sleep that I know I'm not going to get because I've been sleeping 11 hours a night.
Pretty standard.
I'm an absolute monster.
That's quite porn to me right now, mate. 11 hours, I'm actually turned on.
What's he sleeping like? Is he
right, Dick?
I mean, that first month is the first month is obviously the worst.
In an ideal world, I mean, that was amazing thing about Jim was his sleeping was brilliant from the get go. So ideally, they feed 4 hours, feed, then sleep 4 hours, feed, sleep 4 hours, and that's the dream. And then it gets longer and longer and longer. Whereas this cat, I mean, he'll like feed for 4 hours and then sleep.
Yeah.
It's like it'll be like the person that won't leave the all-you-can-eat buffet. I'm getting my money's worth. So he's just, and he's quite big, so I'm doing breastfeeding, but also bottle, like both.
Yeah.
He's just not, I'm just relentless, aren't you, Paul?
Well, like at Christmas, when you eat your massive meal, then you go to sleep for an hour and then you wake up and go,
I'm just
going to have a little bit.
Yeah, I'm just going to have like an extra, just like another mince pie. That'll be fine.
Yeah.
He pukes up quite a lot as well because he's obviously eating far too much than he wants. But
yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I'm talking about you, mate. Yeah.
He's starting to stir, isn't he? I saw on Twitter about your trying to register the birth.
Oh, God, I know. So, yeah, so my husband... Oh, well, okay. All right. You're okay.
Can't face those Twitter notifications? Forgot to watch anything but Netflix? Dreading the video conference small talk at 9? You need a news vitamin, you know. You need the Smart 7. It's a brand new daily podcast that puts your brain into gear. Everything you need to know in less than 7 minutes. You need the smarts? Hey, we got the smarts. The Smart 7, every weekday at 7 a.m. Available right now on Spotify and all the usual places.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
All right, so you were telling us about registering the birth. So I heard up to you we're going to have to go to Heron House.
Yeah, so that's where you register, you know, marriages and births and deaths. But my husband managed to get, he was emailing them and trying to get contact with them and eventually got somebody on the phone and he just said, really sorry, we can't register any births because we're too busy. We're snowed under registered deaths because of the coronavirus.
Oh, no.
So sad. I mean, so sad.
Yeah. So,
but I mean, I put it on Twitter and quite a few people pointed out that he could be a spy, though.
Yes.
He's under this. He's under the radar. He's not on the system.
Yeah.
It's quite sort of narrow parameters to put on him so early doors.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't want to be one of those parents that's like, you need a career in the arts. You need a trade. But that's quite a lot of expectation. Like, you need to learn martial arts, 5 languages, and how to kill a man. In different ways, but that's fine. We've got time.
Or it's those things that suddenly, you know, later in life, you can be like, I lived to the age of 145 because there's no birth certificate.
Yeah.
That
it's true. So yes, yeah, so I don't know when, but they just said, oh, contact us again in a, you know, in a few weeks, and hopefully, but they've got a backlog, yeah, apparently.
But it's just, isn't there normally like a window where if you don't do it before, yeah, it's illegal?
Isn't it 2 or 3 weeks that you've got to, you're supposed to get it in by?
Quite long. I think it is 8 weeks.
Okay. Okay.
6 weeks, 6 or 8 weeks it is. But I mean, we're going to go past that definitely.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
The thing that I'm waiting on, I did my, filled out all my maternity forms to get maternity allowance the other week. So I'm just kind of waiting to find out about that, the self-employed thing, which,
yeah.
Did you do that?
Yeah, I've got, it's what it is. It's not amazing money, but it's something, isn't it? So
yeah. There's the one, like, from what I see, there's like £30 a week if you kind of can't prove stuff, or it's like 145 or something like
that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's, I mean, yeah, I don't know how people can live on £30 a week. There you go. But yeah, we've got the, I've just got the normal statutory. I mean, that's the thing, that's what's weird about having the sort of the positive about having a baby at this time is that it doesn't feel, when it all hit and everything went under and all the gigs stopped and Edinburgh stopped and sort of our industry just got put on pause for an indefinite amount of time.
Yeah.
It did affect me. I mean, it affects me in terms of it affects my husband's business, but it did affect me as in, like, I didn't feel like I had a loss of control or loss of anything because I was already on maternity leave.
Yeah.
So nothing felt like it had been taken away from me or any opportunity had been taken away from me because I was already like, well, I'm going to be on pause for a bit anyway.
Yeah.
It's the good thing about, you know, that's the positive that I should tell myself every day.
Yeah, I relate to that as well. But I know, like, for you, Carl, when you were starting to look at universal credit and things like that.
I just couldn't be bothered.
But also just, I think, that idea of when you're having a baby,
yeah,
suddenly going, oh, I'm going to be on the dole. I don't have a job.
That's like, why I decided against it. Also the hassle of organising it. I just thought, you know, hopefully I got enough squirreled away that can tide us over for a while.
Yeah.
But I just think, I definitely think if I hadn't, the only good financial planning I've ever done is putting a bit of money away. And if I didn't have that and suddenly we're in the situation we're in currently, I would be shitting myself.
Oh, mate, it's frightening. And there must be other people that are self-employed that are having a baby and they just don't have cushions to fall back on. It's a frightening place to be. We're really lucky, and when I'm having tough days or tough, you know, afternoons or mornings, I do think to myself, you know, we're lucky because we're not on the breadliner out, and you know, we have a nice house, and we don't have a garden, we have mud, but it's somewhere that you can stick a 4-year-old and go, all right, see you in half an hour, mate.
Yeah.
other people don't have that, especially in London, you know, people don't have that. We're really lucky in a lot of ways. So I think that's the thing, you just got to sort of cling on to the positive bits in mind fuck of a time.
There's one thing I wanted to ask you about, but I've read a book this week, which I think came from the fact that I heard Catherine Ryan talk about it, or just knew Catherine did it at some point, that her daughter was kind of potty trained by like 9 months or something like that. And there's this thing called elimination communication. Have you heard of that?
No.
So it's like, it's quite an American term, but the idea is that you start from what you can do it from when the baby's born, but you don't get them used to wearing nappies. So you kind of hold them over the toilet and things like that.
Yeah. I have heard about this because my friend said her mate did it, and like she'd be like on a tube and she'd have to whack a potty out,
and
baby on like a potty, so she'd have to carry a potty around with her. When did he potty train? But I think he was just before he was three, and we just bunkered down. So you just have to keep the way that we did it was. Just loads of changes of clothes, like next to it, and every time he wet himself, I'd be like, "There's a toilet there, mate." And then change him, and then eventually, after the first day, there's less accidents and there's less, and then after a week, he's like, "Oh yeah, there is a toilet. All right, cool."
Yeah.
That's kind of how we did it. But I fair play to any mums and anything they want to try and how they want to raise their kid. You all do, you babes. But there's such a lot going on when you give birth and a baby, and there's so much admin
that if giving yourself extra admin, it's not for me. Yeah. But less admin. Like breastfeeding is so full on as well. Like it's so full on. It's brilliant and amazing, but it's really, weird way to describe it. It's very time consuming. And I know that sounds daft, yeah. But I think with your baby, but you can't really do anything else. It's just you and the baby, and you can't really go anywhere. You can't really do anything. I mean, that's fine, actually. It's fine because we can't.
We're not allowed.
Yeah. They're very reliant on you, and it's lovely, and it's bonding with them, and obviously it's really good for them, but it's a lot on you, and it can be really exhausting.
And I guess like you were saying just before, that he feeds a lot, having kind of four-hour feeding sessions or whatever.
Yeah. It's different for everyone. I think, some babies are like on sleep for ages. I think it's just so individual, like from mum to mum, and that's why I think we can sometimes, and even with a second baby, you can sometimes put pressure on yourself to be a certain way and be a certain mum or do things a certain way, and you sort of shame yourself. And I did that loads with Jim, because I found breastfeeding with Jim so hard, and like I was like, we were just like crying at each other. He came home and said, we can't, like, this cannot continue. It was like week three and we were just exhausted, crying into each other's faces. So then that was when I sort of did more bottle feeding and less breastfeeding, and then sort of petered the breastfeeding out. But that was because it was struggling. Whereas it's been a lot better this time, but it still is. It's quite emotionally draining, having a newborn, and with the exhaustion as well and all the hormones. So I just think the less pressure you put on yourself to do things is best. My opinion is, but it depends what baby you've got.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was about to say. That's one of the things I've found so interesting about doing these podcasts, because, just at the start, definitely it was a lot about pregnancy and what we were to expect, and kind of as it's been, I've had a pretty good pregnancy, felt like I've enjoyed it, and we've had a few scans because of my age, and there was a thing with my cervix that they were monitoring, but all that's fine. Yeah. So then learning about people's different experiences once the baby's here and how different all babies are, it's like, similarly, I don't know, who knows what we're going to get.
I think it chips away at that thing. I definitely had it. And I reckon everyone must have that thing of thinking, I think everyone sort of moans about how hard it is, but then you think, ours will be all right. Every single person thinks that. And I'm sure doing this podcast and hearing everyone's stories has definitely given me a reality check.
But still, I know yours didn't sleep, but mine will. Because mine will, mate. And then it gets there and you're like, oh, this one doesn't. Just roll with the punches. Just got to do what he wants to do.
Yeah. And it's that thing, prior to being pregnant, I never really talked to people about their babies or about their pregnancies, or it was just something that other people did.
Oh, would you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So to find out and have people talk to us like you today is really great, just to see what's going on, particularly like with our similar situation in lockdown and a time where there's a plague outside, which lots of people won't be able to relate to. In the Western world, but people who are doing this at the same time definitely will.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like it'll be an interesting story to tell our kids when they're older and be like, oh, you were born when the world was cancelled.
Yeah.
Everything was cancelled, and then you arrived and no one could meet you. Yeah. Nobody could look after you. I mean, that's one thing. We're so lucky because we've got grandparents that live nearby, but it's very hard for them as well. It's been really hard for grandparents because, they want to come and join in and get involved, and it's just surreal in some ways.
That's the thing as well. My parents are in Australia, and so Mum said the other day that they're suggesting there's maybe not going to be any international flights out of Australia until next year.
Oh God.
Yeah, so she's like, that would, it's the first grandchild, but they have to wait till next year to come and meet her. But if that's what it is, that's that's what it is.
Oh yeah, it's just little things like that, isn't it, though? You just think, oh yeah, you think it's not fair, but at the same time, it's not fair for the people that are not well, are they? Well, it's weird because the maternity unit that I was on in St. Mary is now a COVID unit.
Is it?
The maternity unit's gone up one floor and now the bottom one. And so that would fright, again, I feel really lucky that I had my baby when I had it. Sorry, Hannah. Because then I wouldn't want to have gone into my labour ward knowing that, like, the COVID unit was downstairs.
Yeah.
And I bet they probably don't tell mums that. I mean, there's no way they're telling the mums. They're not like, well, guess what's happening downstairs?
don't listen to that coughing. Don't listen to that coughing.
Everybody's coming out this end. Everyone's going back.
God.
Death downstairs, birth upstairs.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that, because it's still a couple of months, I think that my optimism is by then, things will have calmed down.
Yeah, I think so. I do. I think it'll be like another 8 weeks or something of this kind of lockdown. And then I think it will hopefully. I mean, someone might be listening to this podcast in the future.
Yeah. Exactly.
We don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
We just don't know.
Yeah.
So many uncertainties. But then that's kind of like being pregnant and having a baby. It's a weird duality. There's so many ifs of like, I don't know how it's going to go. I don't know what the birth's going to be like. I don't know what the baby's going to be like. These things are out of my control.
Yeah. But I think as well, that thing as well, why I like talking to people about it, is just kind of, again, releasing any of that shame and making everything's normal, because everyone has their own kind of way and experience of it and changes to their plans or how they feel. So. Yeah,
you can have a birth plan. I mean, my birth plan was never, but for both babies was like, okay, we go until we can't deal with the pain, and then we have like the next level up. So like we level up. So we'll start with nothing, and then we'll have diamorphic, we'll have gas and air, and then, or then we'll go for this next thing, and then we'll go like that was my plan.
Yeah,
which sort of worked out. But then with Jim, the first baby, nothing went to plan, and is. Heart dropped and the cord was around his neck, so we're like, get him out. And then so you never know what's going to happen. You just the only thing you can hope for is that no matter how the birth goes, is that at the end of it, you're healthy and the baby's healthy. That's the plan. We're both going to be all right.
Did you have any question?
Did I have any question? I think, I suppose most of them, I've just asked the person what the partner can do in the run-up to sort of help. But actually, that's going to get now towards the business end. I suppose, it's more, what is it, tips to the partner at when it gets to that day of, like, right, we're in, it's happening. What should I be doing? What things should I avoid?
Do you know what's really hard though, Carl? And I think that is, Lee says that, is like, he feels like both times you feel, because there's not much that you can do, just being there. And because it's such an intense thing. I mean, but you know what? The best thing that Lee did was, I think it also depends on the birth, but there was one moment with Jim's birth that the midwife, something happened with the heart monitor, the midwife pressed the button and about 12 people came in, like genuinely, like loads of midwives, doctors, everyone came in, and there was three nurses trying to get like an IV in one arm, three trying to take blood with the other arm. And I think he just saw the absolute panic in my face of all these people. And he just grabbed hold of my hand and went, look at me, don't look at anybody else. She's going to be fine. You're going to be fine. The baby's going to be fine. Just look at me and don't look at anyone else at the moment. Yeah. And then that was when the obstetrician was like, okay, we're going to help you because we need to get this baby out. But that was the most amazing thing he could have said in that moment, because
I was
so panic stricken, because he didn't know what was going to happen either, but he was just like, don't even focus on any of these people. We're going to be all right. And that was the best thing possible to do. Whereas with Bill, I didn't even speak to him, really. No, I did. I saw him every now and again when I was quite high on the remifensal, and I just go, I love you. And then I go, and then I told the midwife I loved her as well, though, so it was fine. I think I might have asked her to go on a WhatsApp. I mean, I love you. Yeah, I think he felt quite, because then,
I think it's just, you kind of just a step up when you feel like there's a moment to step up, because a lot of it is just between the mum and the midwives.
Yeah.
So I think there was a bit when I they said, right, you need to push Kate in. I was like, no, I can't do it. And he went, you can't do it. You can do this. Come on. And I was like, okay. Cool. That was the only thing that, I think that was the only interaction for like 4 hours. Just like, you can totally do this. Let's go. I was like, okay. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Noted. Thank you.
You'll know. You'll feel it. You'll feel when it's time to get involved, Carl.
Yes.
Yeah, you'll feel it, Carl.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Because I'm like squeezing his leg. I feel it.
Oh, he also put Brooklyn Nine-Nine on for me at the start. Because that was like, I was fine, so I was watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and then I was like, close the laptop!
That's a good, I've not actually thought about bringing a laptop with loads of stuff on it.
That'd be good.
That's a good, you're the first person who's mentioned that. So that's,
yeah, we have people said playlists, but not watching stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have playlists, which is you know, it's good, because if you don't, they'll put like radio, whatever
yeah,
on.
Yeah.
If you want to listen to your own stuff, but because we were going to be in the induction for a few days, we just had loads of videos and series. Yeah. Well, so at the start, it was feeling okay watching, but then I got angry at them all. I was like, turn them off and get them away from me. Yeah.
Well, we're watching The Handmaid's Tale at the minute. That's probably not the best option to watch.
No, they're more lighthearted.
Well, no, you know what I'm into.
Yeah.
You could watch horror movies, but that might take your mind off it.
Also, curb your enthusiasm.
Yeah,
I think
we're
that's
loving more, a bit of that.
That'd be a good one, yeah.
Yeah. So, thank you so much for talking to us today. It's nice to meet you.
It's lovely to meet you guys. I'll be thinking about you.
Yeah.
The next 10 weeks.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
And you too.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks, guys.
As he keeps getting more massive.
Well, him and Massive Janet are going to be great friends then.
Yeah.
This is B, because I call him B Unit, because he's so massive. Like, B yeah. Unit. So yeah, B Unit and Massive Janet.
Edinburgh 2021. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot.
Have Take a good care. Day. You too. Bye. Bye.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Heavy Pencil.
An actor of my experience, you just get wrung dry.
A podcast sitcom with Anna Crilly and Tony Gardner.
I played Edmund Gelder, and he played Fanny Snatch.
The Observer called it a lovely thing. Wonderfully funny, pitched perfectly, produced with a light touch.
I'm not having any more of this. I need you to pull me off immediately.
Heavy Pencil from Great Big Owl.